faith. By definition, it's something that is felt with strong conviction without tangible evidence of its existence. Many claim to have it, but how do we attain it? It can't be held. It can't be sold. But it can be passed down. Faith is invaluable to those who feel it. How is it that this belief can unite us regardless of our differences? It's because of conviction, that feeling inside that links so many, from the far corners of the earth to the closest reaches of our neighborhoods. Faith is all around us. Faith springs from a glorious past forward to a promising future. The faith that those who not so quietly defeated rivals and redefined record books would inspire their brethren of today to reach such epic accomplishments. And all along, there are those who cheer. In their minds, they envision. In their hearts, they believe. And because of that, they are simply known as the faithful.
You think about great sports teams like the 49ers, and you think about Joe and Jerry and Ronnie, the obvious things. But then there's guys like John Taylor or Tom Rathman, who you don't think about as much. And that's John McVay. Because you had Bill Walsh and Eddie DeBartolo and George Seifert and Eddie DeBartolo through the glory years. Well, there was John McVay the whole time. John McVay is as important to the 49er dynasty and glory days as anybody in that building. 49ers fans should, if they don't know, they should study up on him and know that the straw that stirred the drink maybe was John McVay in that corner office as the GM who quietly kept everything together.
Good story must start from the beginning. The origin of this faithful begins just 15 minutes west of the cradle of professional football in the small town of Massillon, Ohio, where one of the most underrated yet key members of the 49ers franchise grew to be one of the game's greatest minds.
In Massillon, Ohio, the booster club there are such strong boosters of the football program that every little boy that's born, they put a football, a little rubber football in his crib, hopefully that they'll find some stars that way.
Football clearly was of great importance to the 30,000 people that called Stark County their home. And it was important to John McVay as well. McVay's football career seemed to be headed down the path less traveled. For this persistent young man from the Buckeye State, working his way through the high school ranks and into college programs like Michigan State and the University of Dayton, that path less traveled was leading straight into professional football.
That was the advent, that time, of the World Football League. I was contacted by Johnny Bassett, who owned the team, that was going to be the Toronto Northmen. And they offered me the job to be the head coach. We had one desk, one telephone, and two chairs. And that's how we started. We signed a lot of players from the Canadian Football League because we were going to be in Toronto. But it just so happened that the Mounties ran us out of town. They said that they protect our industry in Canada. They weren't going to have another football team in Toronto. They already had a team. We had to find a new place to land, and we landed in Memphis, Tennessee.
The stint in Memphis was short-lived, as was the World Football League itself. Lasting only 1.5 years, the head coach of the Grizzlies found his time to be surprisingly brief. However, McVay discovered that a giant opportunity would arise.
Then I was contacted by the New York Giants. I was working with the special teams and doing some low-level contracts and some scouting, so on. We had a really rough year. Started off 0-7, and ownership and the general manager called me in. They said that the coach was leaving, and they said, and you're it.
I think a successful season for us, for the Giants this year, would be that we could continue to show the growth and development that we'd like to. Our veterans have got to keep our young guys coming and keep them developing. And I think as this football team grows and develops, if we show the kind of progress that we'd like to have, that we'll have some success.
How would I rate myself as a head coach? I would say, like almost all head coaches that I know and love, if you have a lot of really good players, you're successful. If you don't have any good players, you're going to get fired. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Out of a job in the Big Apple, a relationship with then Stanford's head coach, Bill Walsh, and a chance meeting with a real estate giant, Eddie DeBartolo, would cosmically align. This time, though, far from the cold winter winds of the New Jersey Meadowlands.
It was a chance to go with Eddie DeBartolo, who I had met in Dayton years ago. The DeBartolo Corporation is the largest builder of indoor shopping centers. And Eddie was there to do the finishing touches on a Dayton mall. And that's where I first met Eddie. When I was with the Giants, we needed some help offensively, and Bill was one of the bright guys in the business. So we brought Bill out to give a clinic. Bill and I would spend the evenings together, and we would, have a glass of wine and have dinner and got to be pretty good friends. So when Eddie hired Bill, I called Eddie to congratulate him, and Eddie said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "I don't know." He says, "Why don't you come to San Francisco with us?" I said, "I'll be on the next plane." I went with the San Francisco 49ers in 79, and I said, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "We'll figure it out when you get there."
Do you have your own incredible faithful story to tell? Or do you know someone who truly is a faithful? Let us know about it. Email 49ers Studios at fns@49ers.com. and share it with the world. John McVay was part of the 49ers front office from 1980 to 1996. The soft-spoken Ohioan had risen through the coaching ranks and found a home in San Francisco, where he proceeded to be an integral part of five world championships. The winning he and the franchise experienced started with two things. The first was an incredible opportunity to join great minds. The second was simply a pledge.
I made a pledge to myself that whatever coach I ever work for, I am going to make sure he has an adequate amount of first-rate talent. We would go to Eddie and I'd say, "Eddie, we need a tight end." I said, "They're expensive." He said, "Sign a couple." I said, "We don't need two, we just need one." He says, "Well, get two just in case."
Iconic member of the 49ers family, Eddie DeBartolo Jr., was known for his generosity and daringness as an owner, and that allowed front office members to thrive. Albeit was a different time in the National Football League, and the notions of a salary cap were more than a decade and a half away, front office members working with DeBartolo knew that choosing talent was imperative, and regardless of budget, talent evaluation would bring Lombardi trophies to the Bay.
Eddie gave us the wherewithal to get players on trades, on free agency, and our drafting and so on, gave us a budget that we needed to put our scouts all over the country, and it was really a fun experience. The first year was a little tough. It was lame. We had some players, but one of the things that Eddie had done the year before Bill and I got there, Eddie had already rebuilt the offensive line. We had six really good offensive linemen who played with us for like 10 years and played our offensive line position through the glory years. As we went along, we shored up the defensive secondary. We had the great draft that we took. Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson. We found Dwight Hicks working in a health food store. called it Dwight Hicks and the Hot Licks. The three rookies really didn't care too much for this because they wanted to be the lead on the marquee.
Searching improbable places for the right fit, striking gold in a draft, or meticulously assembling the pieces along the offense and defensive lines, DeBartolo and Walsh, with McVay by their side, worked tirelessly to pull the 49ers out of NFL mediocrity.
The best scout we ever had was Bill Walsh, because he could look at a film of a player, and in just one or two games, he could say, take him. He did that with Tom Rathman. He just looked at him briefly, and he said, we want him.
You talk about Eddie DeBartolo, you talk about Bill Walsh, you talk about George Seifert. I mean, obviously, you got to put John McVay in that same category. Kind of a maverick as far as the back end, you know, the draft, the recognition of players, how that all came together as far as bringing in players. I love John McVay.
Well, John McVay did a great job of, putting this together. What he was able to do upstairs, you know, I think it poured into the players downstairs, and I think he's the reason why we were able to, win so many championships.
The best offensive draft pick that we were ever a part of. How about Joe Montana? Believe it or not, we took Joe in the third round with Dallas's pick. We get to the third round, and Bill says, I really like Montana. Call somebody at Notre Dame. I say, okay, I know the backfield coach there, Jimmy Gruden. And Jimmy Gruden is John Gruden's dad. Tell me about Montana. I said, he's still sitting there, and it's in the third round. He said, just take him. So we got Montana, and that was a gift from heaven.
Whether it was the football gods shining down on the bay, great timing, astute decision-making, or a combination of all three, John McVay worked behind the scenes to make move after move to better the franchise. But still, he was behind the scenes. The only thing greater than McVay's understanding of what it would take to achieve greatness was his humbleness within the organization. He continued his pledge to assist the coaches in any way possible, and his love and respect for those coaches was visible every day in his actions and in his words.
What made Bill stand out was his knowledge, presentation. If you would get a tape of his installations and watch the precision with which he would sell a play, diagram a play, and tell the players how it's going to be executed, when it's going to be used, and who has to do what to make this thing work. He was a brilliant tactician. He was very precise.
That precision was evident in not only Bill Walsh's way of doing things, it was also unmistakable in John McVay's way of handling business. It didn't matter if it was the early 80s in the fledgling Walsh years or the stern, calculated Seifert era. John remained even-keeled. He was known not only for his decision-making prowess on the field, but for making great ones off of it, too.
He had a calming effect. He was strong in his opinions. Things would become very, very emotional. People would be banging against each other. And John had a way of kind of putting it all in perspective. Everybody realized what the ultimate goal was. And John, he had been a head football coach himself. He therefore had an insight into what the head coach needed to be successful. And he did everything he could to help create that foundation.
You know, sometimes as a coach, you think that you can accomplish miracles. But the miracle occurs is when a good player's mother brings him into the world. That's the miracle.
And miracles happened throughout McVay's tenure. There were names for those miracles. Rathman, Craig, Taylor, Rice, Lott, Montana, and the list goes on. But in a galaxy of stellar players and front office figures, John McVay remained a constant star in which the company would set their compass to, in good times and bad.
The relationship between Bill Walsh and Eddie DeBarlo was very combustible. And there were multiple times that Eddie would fire Bill or Bill would quit. And the coaching staff would be like going home for the day thinking that there was going to be a new coach. And the person behind the scenes who would smooth over everything and make everything okay and would address the staff and say, guys, let's just keep a steady keel here. Everything's going to be all right. That person was John McVay. And that organization that the 49ers had, the dynasty of the 80s, I don't think would have been possible without such an even-tempered, mild-mannered, in a lot of ways a politician, a diplomat, that was able to keep that organization running smoothly.
John McVay never wanted to be front and center. He was never a spotlight guy. It's hard when you've got a larger-than-life head coach and then a guy that comes after him that wins two Super Bowls to really get your share of the spotlight. He kept things calm in a building that was constantly seeking perfection and was a guy that did a lot of the grunt work and finding players that allowed Bill and, you know, allowed George and others to have success as the coaches of the San Francisco 49ers.
I always known John as being the leader of the team, the mastermind of putting all the players in place to make the symphony happen the way it did.
Everything starts upstairs. They made it easy for us downstairs. All we had to do, just go out and get this cohesive group, get them together and get everybody working on all cylinders. And after that, we just started winning football games.
Pump fake by Montana. Launches it. Gary Rice! Oh, what a catch by Rice! 38 yards!
John McVay was the backbone of this organization through the glory years. I tell people this a lot, and it's absolutely positively no disrespect to Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh deserves every ounce of credit that he's gotten over the years for building the tradition and the success that the team had in the 80s and has carried over to today. John McVay deserves just as much. He deserves equal time, equal credit. John McVay got us through so many tough times. When Bill would be on the field and John McVay had to take care of the situation, or Mr. DeBarlo would be in Youngstown and John McVay had to take care of the situation. John was everybody's best friend.
Most proud of the camaraderie, the fellowship, having been with Eddie, Bill, and with George and all the assistant coaches and the trainers, equipment guys, groundskeepers. You talk about a tightly knit organization where everybody is on board.
John McVay made a career out of making good decisions. For nearly two decades, he helped shape the culture of the 49ers as we know it. And he brought pride to a team and its faithful, both which he truly loved and cared for.
When I think about the 49er faithful, I think of a group that has committed their loyalty to the team. They were understanding when something went wrong, knowing full well that the team would do everything that they could do to correct it. Our fans are the best in the National Football League, no question about it.
McVay's leadership, along with head men Bill Walsh and George Seifert, raised the 49ers franchise to heights seldom reached. The five Lombardi trophies that adorn the team's trophy case are shining examples of teamwork. They all tell their own story, and all were earned with sacrifices of men who have written the team's history. That history carries over into the highest honor the 49ers can bestow, a place in their hallowed Hall of Fame. Rightly so. In 2013, John McVay had a space reserved for his work in making the team one of the most storied in all of professional sports.
To be recognized by the 49ers as someone who helped having the success that we had made me feel very proud. I was very humbled. It's not very often that somebody who sits behind a desk is inducted into a Football Hall of Fame where you have 20-some super athletes who played in the National Football League. And then here am I, all 5'10" of me, if I'm that tall, and the honor to be recognized by Jed and John Muir, Denise, Eddie DeBartolo. It was a very humbling experience. I'll never forget it.
Members of the faithful, as you can see, we love telling a good story. Trust us to share yours by reaching out to 49ers Studios at fns@49ers.com.
We were having open tryouts the first year or two because we were just desperate for players. And we had a whole flock of guys on the field, a whole bunch of them. And Bill and I were up on the fire escape watching these guys working with our assistant coaches. And Bill said, "Who's that little toe-headed guy down there?" And I said, that's Billy Ring. He said, "Sign him." I said, "What do you see?" He says, "Get him." He says, he's a player. And Billy Ring played for us for a long time.